From two beautifully scenic and historic locations, the Hudson Valley, New York, and Willow, Alaska. This is the Side Vibe, brought to you by Dog Works Radio. Your hosts are author, journalist, and photographer, the Five Sides mom, Dorothy Wills Raftery, and Dog Works Radio executive producer, canine behaviorist, trainer, and lead musher of Team Aneke, Robert Forto. The Saib Vibe is all about the magnificent breed of the Siberian Husky. From training to grooming, and for those who show and breed, from parenting to playing and rescuing huskies in need, whether mushing over snow-covered trails or lounging on tropical shores, even for Hollywood Sibes on the big silver screen and so very much more. If it's about a Siberian Husky, we'll chat about it here.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, hosting from Dog Works Radio Studios in Willow, Alaska. It is a chilly -5 degrees up here and plenty of snow. We are out and about today on the sled dog trails. Junior Iditarod musher Nicole is out on the trails training today. And without further ado, we're going to bring up our host of the Side Vibe, Dorothy Wills Raftery. Dorothy, how's it going?
Hi, Robert. It's going well here. We've got quite a bit of snow ourselves. We had some blizzard conditions a couple days ago. We actually fortunately didn't get as much accumulation as they had originally thought, which was between a foot and two feet. We wound up with probably about maybe a half a foot, and then we got another 3 or 4 inches today. So it's pretty white and fluffy out there, so we're pretty happy too.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's okay. We've gone a couple extra weeks without talking, so there's so much to talk about.
Yes.
Now, Nicole is practicing for her junior Iditarod and getting those races and stuff in, and I just thought we can maybe just talk a little bit about how her preparations are going, and I know we're very excited to kind of sign on as a support for her, too, and I thought maybe just take a few minutes and tell our listeners what's happening with her.
Yes, Nicole is running the Junior Iditarod race up here in Alaska. It is her last year. She is a senior in high school here at Houston High School, and she's going to be going off to college next year at University of Alaska at Anchorage. And she is out training right now with a team of 10 dogs. She typically runs a 40-mile run after school every day with her team. She's preparing for the Junior Iditarod, which is coming up the last week of February, so February 28th, 29th, it's a 150-mile race, and she'll be out there on her own doing her thing and taking care of her dogs and hopefully having a wonderful time out there.
And I know you'll be keeping a lot of posts. I know we want to definitely share that because we want to, definitely be right there along with her. And I know she's going to actually be carrying the Five Sides Side by patch. So we're very, very excited about that. So we'll have to talk more about that as the race gets closer.
Yes, she will. She's looking forward to having that on her parka and talking to her sponsors and folks that are out on the trail about who helps support her, and I know the Five Sides are going to be doing that, and she's looking forward to that as well. Looking forward to not only posting on our pages, but on yours as well. So who do we have today on our show, Dorothy? I know, of course, it's about Siberians, right?
Of course. today, we're chatting with Robert Bob Baker, and he's the applications coordinator for the Save Our Siberian Cyberspace Rescue Fund. He's also a volunteer with Tales of the Tundra Siberian Husky Rescue, and he's a Siberian Husky parent himself. I actually had the pleasure of meeting Bob and one of his beautiful Huskies a few years back now when I was a guest at the Tales of the Tundra at one of their Tales on the Trails event that they had, and that was in Pennsylvania. And that was a lot of fun, and I got a chance to chat with Bob then. The Save Our Siberian Cyberspace Rescue Fund, and that's also the SOS-SRF, and that's an organization which raises and disperses funds to assist Siberian Husky rescue groups and individuals with non-routine expenses incurred for rescue dogs. Now, this might include paying for heartworm treatments or making a contribution towards major surgery or multiple medical expenses. To date, the Save Our Siberian Cyberspace Rescue Fund has helped nearly 500 dogs, Robert, since they first formed in 1998.
Wow.
Now, a little bit about Bob. He was born, raised, and went to high school in a small town in central Ohio where he always had dogs growing up. He talks about his first experience with Siberian Huskies, and that was about 15 years ago. He says when he and his family adopted two litter mates, a brother and a sister, Shadow and Echo. Echo was his daughter's, and when she got married and moved away, she took Echo with her, and Shadow was lonely without his playmate, so Bob adopted a dog from a rescue and named him Sonny. Bob says Sonny was such a wonderful dog that he joined the rescue group, Tales of the Tundra, and has been doing rescue ever since. In fact, over the past 15 years, Bob has fostered a total of 31 rescue huskies, and that's pretty great. Now, initially, Bob became a member of CyberNet, and that's an online email exchange group for people who are owned by Siberian Huskies, because, as we all know, they own us. To which several members of the Save Our Siberian Cyberspace Rescue Fund also belong. When the applications coordinator resigned for personal reasons, Bob was invited to join the group and became the new applications coordinator, which he is still doing today. We have lots and lots to discuss this hour with him, so without further delay, Bob, welcome to the Sci-Vibe.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Bob, let's start off right away with how many Siberian Huskies do you currently have in your family, and who are they, and what are their ages? Tell us a little bit about them.
Unfortunately, we only have one at the moment. We had two until about 3 months ago. We lost our 12-year-old female to a mast cell tumor.
Oh, sorry.
And we're still heartbroken over that. So the one we have now is a 5-year-old male. He's red and white with blue eyes. His name is Brady. He came from a family in northern New Jersey who were losing their house to a foreclosure. And they hated to give him up, but had no choice. And so he started off to be a foster and wound up to be a foster failure, and we wound up adopting him. And he is just a wonderful dog. He has the longest legs I've ever seen in a husky. He is run like the wind.
Oh, that's wonderful. Now, I just want to explain to people, I know we've talked about this a couple of times, but we still do get questions about what the term foster fail means. And that's actually a very positive term. It means that fostering failed, but the dog has now become a permanent member of the family. Is that right, Bob?
That's right. We actually, Bailey was a foster failure. We adopted her. We took her in as a foster, and we had her 3 or 4 weeks, and my wife and I looked at each other and said, and we went up and adopted her. She was with us for about 6 years, and was just a wonderful dog.
Aw. Now, I know when we were corresponding, you mentioned we. Can you just maybe tell us who the we in your household of Siberian lovers are?
Yeah, the we is my wife, Betty Ann, and our adult son, Brian, who lives with us. And they are both, we're all three members of Tales of the Tundra. And, of course, I'm a member of SOSSRF.
Now, what is it about the Siberian Husky breed that first caught your attention when you welcomed Shadow and Echo into your home?
I think the thing that most impressed us was the fact that they're very friendly, very affectionate, but very independent. And the fact that they hardly ever bark. They woo from time to time. But if we're out on a walk and we pass a yard with the little, what we call ankle biters in them, and they're setting the commotion, that our dogs look at them like, what's the matter with you? Are you nuts? And it's just very, very dignified and like I said, very independent, but very, very affectionate and very loyal.
Yeah, you're so true about that, because my next-door neighbor has a little poodle who, even though has been here for 2 years, still continues to bark from morning until night whenever, the dogs are out. And these guys, I mean, they go by and they don't even pay any attention to him. And he's over there, running one end of his fence to the other. And we have a privacy fence so they can't see each other. And he's in a panic, like, oh, my God, what's over there? And my five are just like, whatever, where's the snow? So it's so true. Now, you fostered 31 Huskies over the years, and I just think that's amazing. Can you share with us what is the best part of fostering?
I think the best part of fostering is seeing the dog being adopted. More often than not, the dog picks the person rather than the person picking the dog. When we go to an adoption, when we have an application, we take at least 3 dogs with us so that the adopter has a choice. And we go to the adopter's home, And we quite often know before the adopter does which dog they're going to pick. For example, we went on one, and they wanted a young, energetic husky because they went on hiking and so forth, things like that. And we had a young male named Zeno. And when we got there, the lady was sitting on the floor with her back against the sofa. And when we walked in the room, Zeno went up, climbed up on her lap, and gave her a kiss.
Aww.
And we looked at each other and said, they don't know yet which one they're going to pick, but we do.
Oh, that's wonderful.
The chemistry between the adopter and the dog is just, it's just wonderful.
And
that's
also
the worst part of fostering is having to part with the dog that you fostered with a few for a few months and gotten to know and gotten close to. But we just tell each other, okay, now we can go save another one.
Okay, yeah, I was going to ask you that because they so get into your heart so quickly that my own personal vet, when I had been talking about, you know, on and off, I talk about, oh, I wish I would have, you know, a rescue, and this, and she goes, you would just have so many, you would never find any of them a home. But I so admire the work that rescuers like yourself do because, as you said, you know, even though, you know, you're actually basically handpicking these homes for these dogs, so you know they're going into a good home, and it does give you a chance then to bring in yet another one, hence 31 huskies to date, which I just think is fantastic. I know we talked before about a foster fail with a couple, and I was just wondering, maybe you can just tell us a little bit about a couple of your foster fails and you know, how they worm their way into, your home and your heart.
Okay, well, the first one, foster fail, his name was Timber. And he came from a family that lived in a housing complex, basically a condo, that didn't permit fences. They had a dog named Timber that they absolutely loved. Unfortunately, they had 3 8-month-old triplets. And were unable to take him for walks, and he was sitting in a corner. And so they applied to our rescue group, to Fails in the Tundra, to have him come in as an adoptable dog, and we agreed to foster him. And we had him for about 4 or 5 weeks when we decided, okay, this is a foster failure. And he lived to be almost 17 years old.
That is amazing.
And up until the day he started having spasms, and they were getting worse and closer together, and he finally looked at us and said, please don't make me go through this again. And the day after we lost him, we took a walk, and my wife and I took a walk over along the route we usually walked him. The day before we took him to the vet, I walked him about a mile. And he didn't walk real fast, but he wanted to go. And, so we called the rescue group and said, who needs to be fostered? And they said, Bailey needs to be fostered. We said, okay, we'll take Bailey. And, you know, after, like I said, 3 or 4 weeks, we just decided that Bailey was just, we couldn't give her up.
Oh, that's so wonderful. I mean, they're just amazing, amazing dogs.
And Brady started out to be a foster, and we wound up adopting him, so.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, yeah, he's a sweetheart. He is just a love.
Now, when I had met you, a couple years ago, you had a beautiful woolly with you, but I think it was a girl. And forgive me, I can't remember her name, but who did you have with you that day? Was that one of yours, or was that one of your fosters?
That must have been a foster, because Bailey is the first female that we've ever adopted.
Okay, she was a beautiful black and white, small, like on the smaller side, but she was a woolly. She's actually in that video that I did. Very pretty girl.
Well, that may have been Bailey.
Oh, okay.
Bailey was a black and white and a woolly.
Now, I just want to let listeners know who might just be tuning in that they're listening to The Side Vibe on Dog Works Radio. And today we're chatting with Bob Baker of the Save Our Siberian Cyberspace Rescue Fund. You can follow Save Our Siberians at SOS-SRF on their Facebook page as well as on their website, which is www.sos-srf.com, where they have links for rescue. Are you .com or .org? I'm sorry. I just all of a sudden I'm like checking myself here. You're .com, right?
Yes, we're .com. SOS-SRF.com.
Okay. And they have links there for Rescue Fund application, Rescue Stories, First Spinning, which we're going to talk about a little bit. There's a storefront with items and auctions for fundraising to help Siberians in need, and instructions on how you can join the CyberNet L mailing list, which is devoted to the Siberian Husky and is open to all Siberian Husky owners, breeders, exhibitors, and anyone with an interest in the Siberian Husky breed. There's also a link to my illustrated children's book, Getting Healthy with Harley, is also on their website, as we are highlighting the SOS SRF for awareness with our book, and a portion of proceeds from sales will be donated to them. You can also check out our new soon-to-be online website, fivesibes.com, and on our blog, fivesibes.blogspot.com, as well as here on the Sibe Vibe on dogworksradio.com for links to the SOS SRF as well. Bob, when Save Our Siberian Cyberspace Rescue Fund formed in 1998, is it true that the fundraising idea was to auction items created from yarn spun from the undercoat of our Siberian Huskies and use those proceeds to benefit dogs in rescue?
Yes, that's exactly right. That was our original fundraising idea. The idea for SOS SRF came about in 1997 when Pat Tetra, who's currently the president of SOS SRF, scrambled to come up with the money to pay for the treatment of the dog that was hit by a car and seriously injured. She came up with the idea of a permanent fund to assist with cases like this. And as you say, the original idea was to auction, and that has become, we now have a twice yearly internet auction of Siberian Husky related items. It's been running since December of 1997 and has grown from about 20 items per auction to over 100. We try to have a few of what we call cyber wool items in each auction, which is items that are made from spinning the husky fur, usually hats, cars, scarves, mittens, things like that. We also have a very dedicated group of people who donate beautiful glass items that are husky related. Including a lady in Sweden. We wouldn't have an auction without these people, and our thanks goes out to them, our sincere thanks. Most of the items in the auction have a Siberian Husky or a wolf theme and include stuffed toys, prints, ornaments, clothing, books, jewelry, things like that. The auction is actually run using a homegrown software program developed by our own Maureen Lamb, and the auctions are held in late spring and fall. Listeners can participate by following the link which is available to register, which is available in the quick link section of our homepage or on the general auction page. Anyone can browse the auction, but they need to be registered to bid.
And they can sign up for that at any time, not just when it's auction time, and then would they get notice?
They can sign up at any time just by visiting our website, and they will be on an email list. And when the auction is about to begin, they'll receive a notification, and they'll receive a list of items that they can bid on, and then they can pick and choose the ones that they want.
Excellent. And I've participated in that both ways, and it really is a terrific auction with many, many wonderful items. So I hope folks do go over there, and you know that one of the things that you do when you're over on the website, and again, that's SOS-SRF.com, and definitely check that out. Bob, let's talk about first spinning. I find it really fascinating, and all of us husky parents know exactly how much a husky sheds, and hint for any husky novices listening in, there's enough to create a life-size fur version of a husky. I've even posted some pictures when we get our five sibes groomed, and it's quite the mound. And so here, you know, we kind of have five times the fur enjoyment. Now, I know we have some listeners who would love to hear about the process of spinning husky fur into what is called cyber wool, as you said before. So could you tell us a little bit about the spinning process and how it becomes cyber wool?
We tell people that Siberian huskies only shed twice a year, one last January through June, the other last July through December. The undercoat is first carded to align the fibers and remove any debris that may be there. We then spin it into yarn, which we call cyber wool. The yarn is thoroughly washed and hung up to dry, and the finished yarn is wound into balls ready to be knit into clothing and other items. As a matter of fact, listeners can see a video that's called Shed the Threads that was created by a program called Snouts in Your Town for Purina for their pet-centric website. It stars our recording secretary, Cheryl Dawson, and who I believe you met, and shows how we produce our cyberwool items. You can access the video by clicking on First Bidding on the SOSSRF website.
Oh, that's one. So it's called Shed the Threads is the video
Shed
name.
Shed the Threads. It's an absolutely marvelous video. It shows the process from beginning to end.
That's wonderful, and actually maybe I can even get Robert to put that up under, where we have the show listed on the Side Vibe, so that would be a great video to put there as well.
Oh, yeah, Cheryl does a great job on that.
Now, as we were talking about, these things get really created into such amazingly warm items, mittens and scarves and blankets, and I mean, I can only imagine how snugly warm these things would be. I mean, we all know what it's like when we snuggle down with our huskies and how warm. So they must be terrific. And
we tell people that if it can be 30 below outside, if you put on a hat made of husky fur, your ears are going to be warm.
Maybe that's something we need to get for Nicole up there in the Iditarod to keep her warm while she's out on the trail. And nothing warmer, right?
Yeah, it's going to be below zero here for the next couple of nights. So I've got my husky hat handy.
Now, also, I would imagine these are wonderful keepsakes that some people may want to have from their own Siberian. And do you have members who do the spinning?
Yes, we do. Like I said, Cheryl is one, and then we have a couple of other volunteers who don't volunteer full time, but whenever they have time, they help us with the knitting. So we usually have, we always try to include a couple of cyberwool items in the auctions, so people
okay.
can have. We also have an online store, and you can buy things like the husky, the cyberwool items, and other items from the online store, which is also available on our website.
Now, can folks donate fur from their shedding huskies? And again, I just want to emphasize to anyone maybe new who's listening in, never shave your husky. This is coming from the shedding fur that is on the husky dog that we're talking about right now. So, Bob, can folks donate this? Is it something that, the SOS SRF would take from folks?
Yes. What we ask is that when you brush your husky and you get the fur, put it in a paper bag, not a plastic bag. And when you get enough to send, there's an address on the website again where you can send it, and we will knit that into a cyberwool item. And if you'd like to have it back, as a memento of your dog, we do ask for a donation, but we'll be happy to send you whatever item finally winds up being knitted from it.
Oh, that's wonderful to know. And then if someone didn't want it, they can donate that, and then you can in turn sell that at the auction to help raise funds?
Exactly.
Wonderful. And I just want to point out, too, that on your website, there is a great FAQ page that talks all about, the cyber wool and about what Bob and I were talking about and goes into greater detail. So I really do recommend folks to take a look there as well. But it's always been something I've been very, very, interested in and intrigued by. And I think as we all help groom our dogs, those two times a year, which equals 12 months, I think we all go, boy, if we could do something with this. So this is really wonderful that there is this resource available, and I think it's great that folks can get a memento back or they can donate it. So I think that's really a great resource.
Well, if you remember from the Husky hike that you attended, one of the games we play is plucking your Siberian Husky.
Yes.
You have two minutes to take to pull it out. You can't use a comb. You can only use your hands, but whoever gets the most fur off their husky in 2 minutes wins the game.
I totally wish I had one of my huskies with me that day. It was quite a drive for me, and I didn't bring any with me. Plus, I wanted to take a lot of photos that day, and I was there with my What's Wrong with Gibson
sure.
book at the booth, but. I guess it's not just me then, because it's quite addictive when you start plucking your husky's fur, isn't it?
Well, it comes out in clumps, yes, especially when they're blowing their coat in the spring and the fall.
I know, you're always like, oh, one more, oh, there's one more. And even tonight, one of our our alpha queen here. She's getting some severe arthritis now, and she loves to be in the snow and outside. And I always I say she's under house arrest right now because I have to really work hard at keeping her in and by me and still. You know, I give her just enough leash to let her enjoy putting her head in the snow and that. So her transition into becoming such a full-time house dog is she is blowing her coat 12 months out of the year. And just today I'm like walking behind her going, just a minute, Harley, just a few more, you know, trying to get those tufts out. But it's just a great thing to have because, you know, so many people always say, oh, do huskies shed? Yes, they do. But, you know, I think this is a great resource for them. And I think as any husky parent will say is that...
One of our members has a sign in her kitchen above the refrigerator that says, in this house, husky hair is a condiment.
I love it. I need that sign. Now, Bob, as applications coordinator, you know, you are the first stop for rescues applying for assistance for huskies in need. And, you know, you're basically on the front lines of all the stories. And I know many are heartbreaking. And I was just wondering, can you share a few of the stories that you've come across in your years with our listeners that the SOS SRF has helped?
Yes. I'll start with a couple of the heartbreaking ones. There was one case where a rescue group pulled a husky, a young husky, from a shelter and noticed he was limping. So they took him to the vet, and the vet did x-rays and found out that his hindquarters were filled with buckshot.
Mm.
Somebody had shot him with a shotgun. We were fortunately able to help him through treatment. He was eventually adopted. I think the saddest case I've ever experienced was the one where a group of teenagers threw a young husky off a third-floor balcony.
Oh, my gosh.
And fortunately, a pedestrian came along and saw the dog, you know, trying to stand up on the sidewalk and couldn't. And he looked up, and he saw the teenagers laughing and high-fiving each other. I shudder every time I think of that. Now, fortunately, he was a good Samaritan. He took the dog to the vet, and the vet gave him a discount on the surgery, and the dog recovered. Now, on the happy side, we've got a couple of cases that really stick in my mind. There was one where a group of college students at Tulane University in New Orleans found a husky who had been hit by a car lying in the ditch in pain. And they picked her up gently, wrapped her in a blanket, took her to a vet that I think they found in the Yellow Pages, and told him, they said, you know, now we're college students. We don't have the money, but we'll raise it. And the vet said, I trust you. I'll do it. And he did the surgery. And fortunately, one of the vet techs knew about SOS-SRF. So they sent in an application, and they also did car washes, raking leaves, anything they could think of to raise money, and they donated every penny that they made to the dog's care.
Wow.
And fortunately, one of the parents of one of the students absolutely fell in love with the dog and adopted her, and today she's leading the life of Riley and being spoiled rotten, which is great. The other case that comes to mind is a lady in California who was driving on a busy freeway. The car ahead of her hit a Siberian husky and sped off.
Mm.
She stopped her car in the middle of the freeway and, completely disregarding her own safety, ran over, scooped up the dog, took it to her vet. Now, this lady had no experience with Siberian huskies. She had, I believe, a cockapoo or something like that. And she took the dog to the vet. And again, one of the vet techs knew about SOS-SRF, so she raised some money on her own. We contributed some. We got the dog through the surgery. She spent 6 months taking the dog through physical therapy, including water therapy and the whole bit. And the dog, we put her in touch with a local rescue group, and the dog was eventually adopted. But boy, she was just a really, really, you know, inspirational. Good.
Oh, absolutely. Wow. I mean, it's just amazing when you hear these stories. You know, it's just, as you said, you go from the heartbreaking to, you know, that the happy ending, the success stories of what happens.
And
everything in between. And it's just wonderful that there's an organization such as yourself that can help these out. Speaking of happy endings and success stories, Bob, you've also had experience with canine epilepsy, as everybody knows, is something that, you know, I'm definitely an ambassador for, with one of your own fosters named Cardea. I'm hoping I'm saying that correctly. And you've said that she was on phenobarbital, and she was adopted by a young couple who were not fazed by her needing medication. Can you tell us a little bit about her adoption, how she is today, and how having a seizure disorder did not stop her from finding a forever home and really enjoying a life with her new family?
Well, she was originally purchased from a pet store, and when they found out that she was subject to diabetic or to epileptic seizures, they turned her into a shelter. Our rescue group pulled her from the shelter, and we fostered her. We gave her just a phenobarbital tablet a day, which is really the easiest thing in the world to do. You wrap it in cheese or a piece of bacon, and it goes right down. We were at an event, one of the community fairs, with had our booth set up, and we had Cardea with us, and a young family came by. It was a father and a mother and three young kids. Well, the father absolutely fell in love with Cardea, and he spent 3 hours at our booth with her while his wife walked the kids around to the various different attractions. And he told us, he said, now we live near a hiking trail, but our house does, our development does not permit fences. He said, and I know that I should take a walk every day for my health, but if it's cold or rainy, I sometimes skip it. But I want someone who will not let me skip it. I said, you found her.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they left, he said, I'm going to go home tonight and put in an application for her. Well, the next day, we got an application. And we took her, and they fell in love with her. She was adopted. And we follow up with all our adopters about every 6 months to find out how the dog is doing. So I called just a couple of months ago. It's been 6 years since this happened. And I spoke with the wife, and she said that everybody loves her, and her husband has not missed a single day of walking since he adopted her.
Isn't that wonderful? So sometimes you sit there and go, who helped who? You know? You know, it really is a two-way street, because I actually, a couple years ago, was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis, which limits a lot of mobility for me, and of course part of it is you have to keep moving,
right.
But it's very easy to not want to move because everything hurts. So
right.
I, you know, as you know, I have Gibson, and Gibson's my epi husky, and he's on phenobarbital, potassium bromide, and he also is on thyrotabs because of his he has a thyroid condition. He experiences, you know, he's been managed by his medication since he was 3, and he just turned 9, but he tends to have a lot of side effects from the medication, one of which is hind end weakness, which I've talked about. He gets very ataxic at times, and you know, we on and off over the years have dealt with that, and you know, through laser and some alternative therapies. And he took a fall a year ago, so he's been in a lift harness, and he's come a long way. I mean, he basically is now walking on his own, and I'm supporting him. But to get back to our original conversation, you know, it is this great bond. I help him, and I can see every day, you know, he gets a little stronger, which makes me feel so good. But he's helping me, because if I didn't have to get up and take him out to walk him, you know, it would be so easy not to. So, again, it's another situation where I'm helping him, but he's helping me, you know. So it's quite a partnership. It really is. You know, I think it's so important for us to get the message out, you know, that epi dogs such as Cardea and Gibson can indeed live happy lives and full lives with some care and lots of love. And, you know, as we say, is there a medication schedule and some special care that has to be given? Of course. But I feel, and I know you do too, that the love and joy that they bring into our lives is just so immeasurable. You know, and there's just no reason for these wonderful dogs to be abandoned, skipped over, euthanized, And, you know, of course, there's always extreme cases where a dog has an underlying medical issue. And again, that's something you would talk to at your vet. But we're talking about the dogs that can be managed on medication or some type of alternative treatment. And today, as I've said many, many times, you know, there are medications, alternative therapies, and so many resources and support available from other EpiDog parents that no one is ever alone today. Someone's always just a keyboard stroke away. And I think that's such a great message to get out there and you know, hearing her story as well.
Well, Cardea fortunately had no side effects. Her Messina Rabbit dog kept it totally under control. She's not had a seizure since she was adopted. And her mom said that when her kids get home from school, the first thing they do is run over and throw their arms around Cardea. So
that's wonderful. It just warms my heart to hear this. Yeah, I mean, because they are such wonderful dogs. And as you said, you know, sometimes it's as simple as medication. Sometimes it could be a food change or an environmental change. I mean, there are just so many different things to try, and these dogs could just be such a wonderful part of a family for many years to come. While we're on this topic of canine epilepsy, Bob, you sent me over some very promising news that was an announcement from the Epilepsy Research UK. They had announced that scientists have now located a gene that regulates epilepsy. And, you know, I know I'm very excited about this for both humans and canines. This opens up a whole new world discovery, and I'm actually waiting to hear back from some other people that I, you know, do work with in the field on this. I mean, what are your feelings about such an announcement as this?
Oh, I was thrilled to see that. I just thought that was a great breakthrough. I'm a freelance writer, and I do a lot of technical writing, a lot of which has to do with biomedical. And so as soon as I saw that, I said, wow, this is, you know, this is a breakthrough.
It really is. And if anybody wants to read a little bit more about it, I'm going to be posting it over on Five Sides. I was absolutely thrilled when you sent it to me, and I thank you for that. And I'm going to do a little blog article about it as well. But you can go to epilepsyresearch.org.uk, and you can read about that. You can also sign up for their newsletter there. But this is some really great, promising news, I think.
It's actually written in English so that a layman can understand. You don't have to be a PhD biologist to read about it.
Yes, which is beneficial because I that was true because I read it and, you know, it's easily understandable and you just can't help but feel good because, you know, this is what we're all really working toward, this awareness and working toward this, that one day, hopefully across the board for both canines and humans, that we can have, you know, a cure for epilepsy. So this is very, very great news. And again, I thank you for sharing that with me. Now, Bob, let's talk about another one of your many foster dogs, Damona. Can you share her backstory about what happened to her? I know she was initially adopted by a gentleman named Joe when she was 7 years old, and you had told me she was living the life of a husky princess until, sadly, one day, 4 years later, Joe was diagnosed with terminal cancer. Can you talk to us and let us know what was his dying wish for his now 11-year-old husky, and how was she helped?
Well, when he knew that he had to go into hospice care, he called us because we didn't originally foster her, but we were along on the adoption. And we were the closest family that he knew of. And he called us and he said, I cannot turn her into a shelter. He said, I know that no one is going to adopt a 7-year-old diabetic dog. And he said, I cannot go face my maker with that on my mind. And he said, can you possibly take her and care for her for the rest of her days? And we said, yes, we will. He said, we'll list her as a foster, just in case. But, you know, she'll probably never be adopted, but we'll keep her, and we'll be happy to do that. So he wanted to keep her as long as he possibly could. So we picked her up on a Saturday. He passed away that Monday.
Wow.
It was almost as though he waited until he knew that she was going to find a wonderful forever home.
Oh,
and,
that gives me the chills.
Oh, yeah. And I had to learn, I had never in my life ever given a shot to an animal or a human or, you know, and I had to learn to give 2 insulin shots a day to, you know, to Damona. And the first time I did it, I was terrified. But fortunately, it's actually very easy. You give the shot to the dog in the scruff of the neck. And it's the needle is so fine that they barely feel it. And we would always give her a little treat after we gave her the shot. And as a matter of fact, if we kind of, you know, didn't give her the shot right on time, she'd be looking at us like, hey, Dad, you forgot something. And that the one thing you have to be careful of, and they warned us about this, they said she can actually go into insulin shock, just like humans do. So they said, keep a bottle of white kale syrup on hand. And sure enough, one day she staggered out into the hall with her eyes glazed, and we gave her a tablespoon of white kale syrup, and within about 5 minutes she was fine. But,
wow.
Boy, she had the dickens out of us.
I can imagine.
And,
so. Now, her oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, her story doesn't stop there. I was hoping maybe you can tell us a day about the day that Damona went to school. I know she met some fourth grade elementary students that were studying about the Iditarod, which, Robert, this is right up your alley. How did the children react to meeting a real sled dog, and how did Damona take to the children?
They loved Damona, and Damona absolutely loved kids. She, even from turning to the school, we knew that she was great with kids. The fourth graders loved her, and they were thrilled to actually meet the kind of dog that had run the Iditarod that they were studying for. And after we finished talking to the fourth graders, the principal came over to us and said, would you mind taking these dogs into a class of autistic children? And we said, oh, no problem. So we walked into I had Damona and several of our other members had their dogs. We walked into the classroom of autistic children, and over in the corner was a little boy, maybe 6, 7 years old, and he was sitting on a stool. And the teacher told us, she said, now he's severely autistic. He rarely moves. He rarely speaks. He just watches everything that goes on. And we said, okay. So we talked to the autistic kids just like we would have talked to the fourth graders. And after a couple of minutes, he actually got up off his stool, walked over to me, and said, what's your name? And I was totally stunned. And I said, well, I'm Bob, and this is Damona. And he reached down to pat her, and he said, Damona. And now she knew that he was a special needs child, and she reached up and licked his fingers. And he actually smiled, which autistic children are not supposed to do. And I was totally taken aback. And I handed him the leash, not knowing what else to do. And what happened next, I had the teachers with their mouths hanging open. He walked around the room from child to child saying, this is Damona. This is Damona. And now these are autistic children, so they're pulling her tail, they're pulling her fur, and she's just eating it up and licking her fingers. I was so proud of her.
Walking
around the room, he came back to me, handed me back the leash, and said, thank you, and walked back and got on his stool. Well, I'm standing there with the tears just streaming down my face. I don't think I've ever experienced a more emotional moment in my life. And the teacher said that they were definitely going to talk to his parents about the possibility of adopting a dog, because they had never, ever seen this child react like this.
Oh, and that is wonderful. I mean, that is just amazing.
Oh, that is one of the most touching moments of my life. Okay.
Yeah, I'm over here, and it's actually getting, you know, I'm tearing up over here because it's just touching my heart so much to hear these stories, you know, to hear this, and what a special instant bond for her to have, you know, and they're just so smart and such intuitive dogs. And, you know, Bob, in your opinion, what do you see as the value of, you know, young school children, those both with special needs and without special needs, getting to meet a real-life Siberian Husky or dog, for that matter, in a classroom environment?
A couple of things. First of all, we always start off our sessions at school by telling the kids, you know, how you should meet a strange dog. Always ask the owner if it's okay. Hold out your fist, not an open hand, so they don't think you're going to grab them, you know, the whole drill. And then we actually let the kids come up and meet the dog and practice what we just told them. And then we launch into a discussion of the Siberian Husky, their background, so forth and so on. I think the other value is that a lot of these kids are not aware that there is such a thing as rescue. Mm-hmm. And they think that the only way you can get a dog is to go to a pet store and buy one, which, of course, as you and I both know, they came from puppy mills, and that's the worst thing you can do.
Right.
And so we talked to them about rescue, and say, you know, and tell them all the benefits and everything. As a matter of fact, we started doing this when the group was formed about 15 years ago. Well, some of the kids that we met 15 years ago are now young adults. And a couple of them have actually joined the group and have told us that I remembered you from when you came to the school and have always wanted to do this. And so they're now members of our group. And
isn't that wonderful?
It is. It really is.
And, you know, education is so important.
They're telling people, don't go to a pet store, you know.
That's
adopt
it, right.
And rescue.
Exactly. And, you know, this education is what's so important, you know, in programs such as this, too. And as you said, they didn't even know that there was a rescue. And it just helps change that way of thinking. You know, you don't go to the pet store. Let's look at rescues. Let's see who we can help, you know. And, you know, it's, and of course, you know, there are reputable breeders. But, you know, these pet store pets and these you know, these puppy mills, it's just, you know, hopefully through education we can really initiate change so that, you know, eventually one day we won't have this problem. You know, I think that's all of our wish that, but it does start with education and it does start with the young because they're the ones that will hopefully help us make a difference.
Exactly. That's why we respond to any request to talk to a group of kids anywhere and in time.
Excellent. And it's wonderful that they come back and they're part of the group now. So that's really great to see that they're paying it forward as well and getting that message out there, which is so important. You know, sometimes it just boggles my mind when I see the number of huskies that are, you know, that come through that are in, you know, animal controls and shelters. And, you know, I know you guys and the rescues really do all they can to try to get as many of these dogs saved as they can. And sometimes you sit here and it really blows my mind that this is one breed and there's so much of this going across. And then when you multiply that out across the breeds and, you know, across the states, across the country, across the globe, it's very mind-boggling, you know, and hopefully one day we can get that all under control so it doesn't exist anymore.
The first dog that we ever adopted from rescue, Sunny, was found wandering the streets of Paterson, New Jersey, which is probably the dog-fighting capital of New Jersey. Mm. He was skinny as a rail, covered with ticks, and you take him into a shelter, and we adopted him. And for the first few months he was with us, we suspected he might have been what they call a bait dog, because anytime you reached out to pet him, he would flinch. Yeah, well, once he got past that, he was the most wonderful, affectionate dog you've ever seen in your life. We took him to more events, and more kids fell in love with him.
See, that's another great message to get out there, too, that even though these dogs, no matter, you know, a lot of times when they come in, you don't know what their past was or what they've experienced, but they can be worked with and loved and rehabilitated and become these wonderful dogs that, you know, and have these wonderful lives. So, you know, another thing for people not to fear the dog's unknown because, you know, working with them and I know the rescues are wonderful for giving folks a lot of, you know, assistance and tips on how to rehabilitate these. A lot of rescues do the rehabilitations as well. You know, so hopefully people won't, you know, will understand that, you know, these dogs are wonderful dogs. You know, it just takes a little time and patience and a lot of love.
Yeah, well, our rescue group requires this. If you're going to foster, it requires you to have the dog in your home for a minimum of 30 days before it becomes available for adoption, because that way you get to know the dog, you get to know its habits, you get to know any traits that need to be corrected, and we have to fill out an evaluation form that's 3 or 4 pages long that we send to the adopter before we ever go there, that gives all the dog's background, the medications he's on, what commands he knows, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. That's great. It's great that those, you know, those things are in place. And also, too, I mentioned that 30 days would give this dog a chance to settle down, maybe learn to trust a little bit, too, and get used to its own environment. Because I imagine that would be a frightening thing, too, for a dog. You know, they come from something that could have been abusive, and then they're not sure what's going to happen. So I would imagine it could be a very scary thing for the dog as well.
Right.
Now, Bob, did Damona ever get adopted into a forever home?
Oh, yes. We were amazed. A young couple who lived out near Lancaster, Pennsylvania, in Pennsylvania Dutch country, they had actually adopted 2 dogs from us several years earlier, and a male and a female, and they just recently lost their female, and their male was devastated. His name was Brahms. And so they saw Damona on our website and said, oh, please bring her to me. This And so we took her to their house. And when we got out of the car, Brahms' eyes got as big as saucers. And they said the first night she was there, she said they kept Brahms' doggy bed under their bed. And when they went to bed at night, Brahms would pull out his doggy bed and spend the entire night on the doggy bed beside their bed. And they said the first night that Damona was there, they got up in the morning and Brahms wasn't on his doggy bed. He was lying back to back with Damona.
Oh.
And we warned them, you know, she needs the insulin shots. And the wife said, hey, I'm a nurse. I give shots all the time. Big deal. And
wonderful.
Her husband was actually in the medical profession. He sold surgical instruments. So it was a perfect fit.
Oh,
and they
that's
had
wonderful.
For about 3 years before she finally passed away of, you know, from kidney problems, probably caused by the diabetes.
Oh, but here she had these wonderful three years living with this family and Brahms.
She had a wonderful life with them. They were just absolutely wonderful.
And now her story is included in a book called The Divinity of Dogs by Jennifer Skiff. And a percentage of the revenue of sales of that book is also donated to the SOSSRF by the author. I, too, have this book, and it's a wonderful book filled with stories of special dogs such as Damona. Now, for anyone who's tuning in, you're listening to The Side Vibe on Dog Works Radio, and today we're chatting with Bob Baker of the Save Our Siberian Cyberspace Rescue Fund. You can follow SOSSRF on their Facebook page as well as on their website, and that's www.sos-srf.com, where they have links for Rescue Fund's application, Rescue Stories, First Spinning, as we spoke about before, their storefront with their items and auctions for fundraising to help Siberians, rescued Siberians in need, and instructions on how you can join the CyberNet L mailing list, which is devoted to the Siberian Husky and open to all Siberian Husky owners, breeders, exhibitors, and anyone with an interest in the Siberian Husky breed. Again, a link to my illustrated children's book, Getting Healthy with Harley, is also on their website, and we're highlighting the SOSSRF for awareness with our book and with my book. I always say our because I include the five sibes. So when I say our, it's my five sibes and I because we're a team. and a portion of the proceeds from sales will be donated to the SOSSRF. And you can also check out our new soon-to-be online website, fivesibes.com, and on our blog, fivesibes.blogspot.com, as well as here on the Side Vibe on dogworksradio.com for links to the SOSSRF as well. Bob, having been a foster to so many rescued Siberian Huskies, what is the main piece of advice that you could give to a family thinking about fostering a Husky?
Be prepared for an experience that you couldn't imagine. it's an absolutely wonderful experience. As I said, when the dog is finally adopted and you see the chemistry between the dog and the adopter, it's just absolutely amazing. And it's like I said, it's hard to part with them if you've had them for a couple of months, because you do get close to them. And like you say, they worm their way into your hearts. But then you say, okay, now I can go adopt another one. But going to it with an open mind, be prepared to enjoy yourself, because you will.
And what if the family has other dogs and children in their home? Is there a best practice in your experience for integrating a rescue husky into that home? As we said before, it could be, a frightening experience for one who maybe came from a one family home or who had been abused or abandoned.
Right. When we go on an adoption, what we do is if the family has another dog, we let their dog and our dog, we ask them to walk their dog around the block. And we walk around the block with the foster in the other direction. So when they meet, they're on neutral turf. And there's no, it's defending, property or anything like that. If the two dogs seem to get along and maybe play with each other a little on leash, then we walk home together and take them into the backyard. Most of the adopters who have other dogs have fenced-in yards, and we drop their leashes and let them see how they get along. And then if they get along outside, we let them go inside and see how they get along. And if that goes well, then we bring in the next dog and repeat the process. We went on one adoption. We had a dog named Hurricane, and he was about 7 years old. And the family wanted a young dog. They didn't even want to meet Hurricane because they thought he was too old. But they had a female. and we were the first ones there. And the hurricane met the female, and we went through the whole process. And when we left and they brought in the next dog, their dog kept going to the gate looking for Hurricane.
No.
So when we finally brought Hurricane into the house, it was a mother and father and three daughters. And they sat in chairs. The Hurricane went around the room from one person to person, kissing them.
Aww.
And at the end they said, well, we didn't think we wanted Hurricane, but he's the one.
he chose them.
He just sold himself, yes. Like I said, more often than not, the dog chooses so usually once we go through that, the dogs know each other. They're not strangers anymore. And, you know, Siberians are just naturally, a pack anyway. And so they usually don't have any problem once they know each other and, they're accepted. And what we do is when somebody adopts a dog, we call them the next morning and say, how did the dog do overnight? Do you have any questions? Were there any problems? And then we call them about a week later, and then maybe 2 weeks later. And we eventually get to the point where we call them about every 6 months.
That follow-up support, that's a wonderful thing to have. And it works on both ways. It's great for the family to know it, and it's also great that, it reassures you that, the dog's doing well. Now,
if there's any problem, we can nip them in the bud.
Mm-hmm, right away, right. Now, Bob, if a rescue or a foster parent, foster or parent of a rescue husky finds themselves faced with a medical emergency and they're in dire need of financial assistance, what is the procedure to apply to SOS-SRF? And can you just, quickly walk us through that process?
Sure. It's actually very easy. If you go to our website, which you've mentioned several times, you'll find a link to an application. And if you fill out the application, you can submit it right online. Now, along with the application, we ask for a couple of supporting documents. If the dog has already been treated by a veterinarian, we ask for a detailed invoice from the vet. If the dog has not been treated and you've just gotten an estimate, then we'll accept a detailed estimate. And if we approve it once the dog has been treated, then we need the detailed application. We also ask for a statement of prognosis from the vet, treating vet. And this is not a detailed step-by-step procedure, but simply a statement that in the veterinarian's professional opinion, there is an excellent chance that the dog will recover thoroughly and be able to lead a normal life. And we also ask for a photograph of the dog, preferably in JPEG format, more so that we can be sure that it's actually a Siberian Husky than, mm-hmm. than anything else. And once we get those, then we submit there's an application form that I convert all that information into and submit it to the board of directors. Our rule is that we have to have an application for at least 3 days, except in case of an emergency. Like the dog in California that was hit by the car, and the vet, she needed an immediate approval for the vet to do the surgery. Except for cases like that, we have to have it for 3 days, and then we do an online vote. And if the applicant, whatever amount that we approve, then we let the applicant know that, okay, we've agreed to fund the dog for, if at all possible, unless the person, the applicant, has already paid the bill, we prefer to send the money, the check, to the veterinarian or the hospital or whatever, just to keep everything above board. If they show us a receipt that says, well, I've already paid the bill, then we'll send the check to them.
Now, the Save Our Siberian Cyberspace Rescue Fund does so much to help rescues and rescuers with huskies in need. There are many ways to help, and I just want to mention, through the two auctions that you have, your storefront, there are holiday cards, Cyberwool items. Folks can shop at Amazon.com, Cafe Press, iGive.com, and even by purchasing my Getting Healthy with Harley book, and you can link that right through the SOS-SRF website, or you can go to ArcticHousePublishing.com. Either way, it will benefit the rescue fund. Bob, does the SOS-SRF have a dream or wish list in closing?
Actually, our wish list is just to be able to continue doing what we're doing now. We're all working very hard But we're just absolutely thrilled with the results that we're getting. And all we want to do is just be able to help more and more dogs. The more donations and the things we get, the more dogs we can help.
Right. Well, it's wonderful. You guys do such wonderful work. Robert, are you out there? Did you want to ask anything of Bob before we close the show?
No, I'm all good. Thank you.
All right. Bob, thank you so much for joining us here today on the SciVibe, and many thanks to you and your fellow Save Our Siberian Cyberspace Rescue Fund board members for all the wonderful work you do on behalf of helping rescue huskies in need. Thank you again for being our guest.
Okay. Well, thank you for helping me. I'm glad to spread the word about SOSSRF.
Absolutely. And we'll be talking.
Okay.
All right. Everybody
thank you
take
very
care.
Much.
Robert, give my best to Nicole. We'll be watching her out on that Iditarod trail.
I will. On behalf of our guest today, Robert Baker, and our host, Dorothy Wills-Raftery, we'll talk to you guys next time. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.